Today's talk is given by Ian Mackay, Head of Special Information at the Improvement Service. Ian and his team are responsible for coordinating the development of land property addressing applications for the Scottish public sector using the One Scotland Gazetteer and more recently such things as Ordnance Survey's address-based products. And Ian has worked with land and property information for over 25 years, the last nine of which have been involved with Gazetteers and Ordnance Survey mapping products on behalf of the Scottish Government. Ian also represents Scottish public sector interests on a number of committees and boards, both at Scottish and UK level, and was involved in the original Scotless pilot in 2001. And those who were here a fortnight ago will remember our lively discussion around the origins of the Scotless name itself, so this therefore makes an even more suitable following talk, and we thus look especially forward to hearing from Ian.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I don't know if this will last 50 minutes, but we'll see how it goes. Quite a lot to go through. What I want to do is have a look at the Scottish spatial data infrastructure. Maybe trying to think a wee bit about what a spatial data infrastructure is. Look at what we've done in the Improvement Service in terms of the spatial hub. Some observations about Inspire, the EU legislation for publishing spatial information. A bit about Scotless. I wasn't able to attend a fortnight ago, so this might be a completely different, or it might be identical. Money's from the former. And the key issues and challenges that we face along the way. So the Improvement Service was formed in 2005. We've grown now to about 60 people work for the Improvement Service now, and we work on behalf of Scottish local government, and we do a wide range of things with Scottish local government. We do things, more relevant things here, or we provide support to the heads of planning Scotland, so we're involved with the planning. The current planning system in Scotland is under review. We're working to coordinate local authorities using that, and quite a lot of what we've done in the spatial hub is very relevant to the planning review. We support community planning. The Community Empowerment Bill became law, became the Act this week, and that's made quite significant things about people getting access to information in local communities. We also supply support and learning opportunities for elected members. Training for councillors to teach them what is involved in an elected member. I'm not quite sure who the team that does that is, but God help them. And we also do things like organisational development. So it's quite a wide ranging organisation. We do a lot of things, and the Spatial Information Service is a new part of it, although I've been with them since the start in 2005. So the idea for the spatial hub came from the One Scotland Gazetteer. Cameron was just asking there how long ago was we started that. 2003 we started it, and apart from that, 2003 seems ages ago. The most striking thing is there was £10 million of funding made available to do it. Those were the days. But what the Gazetteer involves is you've got to get local government manages addresses. It's the point of change for all addresses through the planning application, building warrant process. So you shouldn't be able to build anything, knock it down, building warrant. You shouldn't plan development. So local government's the best people to maintain an address gazetteer, although other people, the Royal Mail, do so as well. But if that's done locally in 32 councils, you end up with 32 products which suit each council. But the value of the One Scotland Gazetteer is it's fairly consistent across Scotland. Arguably, how much fairly is, but it's generally pretty consistent across Scotland. But that's taken a huge amount of work to get people in 32 councils to agree to do the same thing. That's difficult, but actually getting them to actually do what they've agreed can be even more difficult. Really tricky. But it was completed and it took about 3 years to get everything going. It's widely used, supports e-planning, energy performance certificate. gets the emergency services all use it very heavily now. And within the last 3 or 4 years, we got approached by the Ordnance Survey to ask if we would make our data available to the Ordnance Survey for inclusion in the address-based product. So the One Scotland Gazetteer forms part of address-based now, and that has actually opened up some commercial opportunities, which has allowed us to expand our remit of what we do. So, the idea of a spatial data infrastructure started with an AGI Scotland challenge, I believe, to Scottish Government to provide and produce a strategy. And Cameron at that time wrote the majority of this document, I believe. And oh, it's an excellent document, you've got to agree to that.
Oh, these objectives. Modesty finance.
Yes. The objectives that everyone, most up-to-date, accurate geographic information that may deliver the best use of resources, can't argue with that. And develop ways of sharing geographic information, best value, and high-quality knowledge returned from each of the data. And then there was the McClellan report that had talked about ICT in the local government and shared procurement, shared product development, and all sorts of things which the Gazetteer and the SDI would mean. The only problem is that 2006 to 2011. So what's happened in the 6 years since then? Or maybe the question is what happened in the 5 years there? And then what happened in the 6 years thereafter? I would argue not as much as there should have been for a variety of reasons. So, this SDI has been developed using what I think we know as Juracek's methodology. You've all used this, I can assure you. It's named after Konstantin Juracek, and a historian, politician, diplomat, Slavist. He also was involved in Byzantine studies. Now, if you want to start talking about his spire, you'll see where he came from in Byzantine. But he's better known for this statement, which I think sums it up, that no one's actually been that interested in what we're doing in terms of spatial information and management terms. So they don't know what we're doing. We're trying to make all these sort of things work, and there's never been any funding to build a spatial data infrastructure for Scotland. It's been done largely in the goodwill of people and skunk work, something for people getting on with stuff, despite perhaps the official policy of their organisations. So we built the spatial hub, which was, it was within our gift as the improvement service to control, encourage local government to work together on this. So we built the spatial hub in the last 2 years. So the way it works is it's really simple. It's the same as the Gazetteer. The person in the council who contains that particular data set, I'll come onto the data sets, they upload it or give us access to a web feature service or upload the shapefile. Then we use CCAN and various open source products to put it onto a cloud server. We then use FME. We couldn't work without FME, I think it's fair to say, because of the varieties and the various attributions of the data sets. We use FME as a very powerful tool to get data looking sensible and consistent. We then publish it, and at the moment, to access the data, I would say at the moment, it has to be through a WFS or a WMS with a token and an authorization code. So, who's the intended target for this? The public sector, local government, to try and improve their information, the information the local government's got, and Scottish government. Local government reports regularly to Scottish government on various data sets. These then go to Scottish government, and some Scottish government takes the time to collate that data and make it the same and build a national data set of it. But that happens in regional planning authorities, it happens all over the place. So the idea is for somebody to do that once and then make it available to everybody else. The general public, we're planned, it's not there yet, to provide a view service to allow people to look at this data. Some of it's available already through other places. SE Web is a good place. But also in terms of the community empowerment, community councils, also the private sector, and also some startup companies. There's a startup company incubator called CivTech, based in Edinburgh, Scottish Government funded, and that's for small startup companies, people wanting to build apps. We're talking to them about maybe getting access to our data sets, and that's in the early days. I think I was always mystified, this is somebody else's slide, about what the guys in the bottom left are laughing at. I think the only thing, and if anyone's Stuart from local government, seen some of the data sets that we get in the raw form, they are absolutely spectacularly bad and different. And that's thanks to a guy that's involved in the Scotlist project, trying to find it, where he kept in one of the red kite nesting sites, but an integral part of Scotlist. And I don't think the previous speaker mentioned it, but I don't know. But there's actually a really serious point behind that. You've got to think, when you make information available, what it's going to be used for. So if you put out archaeological data, people go and dig up the ground, they know where to go and dig it up. If you put in something like that, people will target these. So you've got to think about what you're doing with data whenever you make it available. So, I mentioned Inspire. It's EU directive. And it was transposed into Scots law in 2009. Contrary to what a lot of people hope and think, Brexit will not affect it because it's written into Scots law, it's written into UK law. It would be an effort to actually repeal these bits of legislation for it not to apply. And it's quite handy for our purposes. It's basically concerned with environmental data, and it works in themes and annexes. And there were workshops that took place around 2012 on various thematic things. But the main themes, certainly as far as we're involved, land and property, management boundaries, transportation, protected sites, and the metadata records. And there was further workshops. And there's lots of advice out there from it, huge amount, some very sensible documents. Again, I think Tim, you and Cameron probably wrote most of that. And it's
that was the one I wrote.
That's the one you wrote, yeah, so there's plenty of stuff out there. You can find out more than you want. So, it's incredibly useful, though. One of the constant gripes from the spatial information community has been nobody actually appreciates what we do except ourselves. We're all passionate about it, we're convinced. Try going to a council management team or virtually any senior management group and say, oh, aye, that's the guys in the shed that do the maps, isn't it? And that's how it seemed. But Inspire has really raised it because every authority has a statutory obligation to comply with the legislation. Now, that's terrifying for some authorities because their data is absolutely hellish, some of the data sets. Inspire doesn't care how good or bad your data is, it insists you publish it, irrespective of the quality. So that causes concern. One council up in the north of Scotland, they haven't actually done it very much for Inspire, well, nothing. And someone who knew that they hadn't done anything about it actually went to the Information Commissioner, who ended up writing to the council, pointing out that if they didn't produce a plan by January 17 to show how they were going to do that, how they were going to comply, she would take to the court of session for contempt. And that certainly wakes up the council because, one, it could be very expensive, and two, the publicity is not great for a council just ignoring stuff. So that's been really helpful. Inspire has really got spatial information and all this stuff recognised at a higher level than we could ever hope for. One of the issues, though, from a local government perspective is local government doesn't actually get much benefit from Inspire. This is guy that gets all the benefit from it. He sits in that. There's nothing else to do except look at Inspire data. And I think he does some of the specifications for it as well. There's a limited use in a lot of the data, and a lot of the data is very, very useful and very valuable. So it's got good and bad sides to it. But the problem really selling it within local government is that at the bottom of the left-hand pyramid, that's where most of the costs of maintaining this data are found. But you get very little benefits from having consistent data at a national level. Maybe arguable, but I think there's something not far wrong with that. And I think what we're trying to do is we're trying to reduce the cost to councils and increase the benefits to them. That's really what we're trying to do there. Has everyone reading the newspapers or anything know that public finances are not very clever? And in terms of local government, again, over the next up to 2020, the projected expenditure is going to increase. We've got an ageing population, people are living longer, all sorts of things like that put greater demand on public services, and at the same time the money available from the government is greatly reduced. And the Scottish Government settlement for local government for 2017-18 is a 5% reduction. Now, 5% reduction doesn't sound very much, but in local authority terms, education and social care, social services, are all ring-fenced. So the 5% of the total budget cut disproportionately hits back office, administration, all these sort of services, including GIS, people working, planning departments, all these sort of things. And this is coincident with Inspire. So, moving on a bit from Inspire to Scotless, the Scottish Land Information Service. It's been not a new idea. The original one, really, although it only included England and Wales, believe it or not, only took 18 months to complete it. I mean, we've been at the Gazetteer since 2003. That was completed in 18 months. As far as we've been able to determine, there was never a business case for it, except a need for taxation. There weren't any project boards or working groups. I don't think that was ever considered. Nobody really cared about third-party IPR from Ordnance Survey or other bodies, but I suppose they kind of owned the IPR anyway, so that didn't come into it. There weren't people complaining about the data not being open. They could be data providers to happily supply the data. You get your property confiscated and hung if you didn't supply or contribute the data. And the technology options were a bit limited, quill and parchment mostly. And if you think today of the technology that we've got to do all of this stuff, it's quite amazing that that was done so quickly. But what it does show is that if the guy in charge says make it happen and has got the clout to make it happen, it will happen. The trouble is we've never actually managed to make a Scottish SDI up to that level of getting somebody to say make it happen. So, Scotless originated from an RICS, Institution of Chartered Surveyors, idea to celebrate the millennium, and it was a project called Doomsday 2000. There were a range of partners, Registry Scotland, Glasgow City Council, Ordnance Survey, BGS, and there were two pilots delivered. One was a CD-based, this brilliant new technology that just came out of CDs in 2000. And Glasgow had a web-based one version of the same thing. And it never really made it into a functioning service. And I think one of the things that Scotless should be is all land and property information. And that also puts us underneath the ground. That was in the east end of Glasgow when we were looking for a pit shaft and drilled a hole to see if they could find it. And succeeded. And that's the crane lifting them back out. But that could be... Whenever these flats there were built, probably no one knew there was a coal shaft there, and they could just as easily build on top of the coal shaft. And as I said, the technology, I think the thing that really sticks to mind and shows how far we've come is that in 2000, I worked for Glasgow City Council at the time, and the internet connection for the entire council was 1 megabit. And we increased it to 2 megabits for Scotless, we could fund it from Scotless, and it cost £67,000 to do that. I've got something like 24 megabit in the house, and you pay 20 quid a month for it. Technology's moved hugely in a short space of time, so things like Scotless should be very doable. I found that this morning, actually, the original aims of Scotless, and I don't know how much that chimed with what Register said a fortnight ago about it, but an integrated data set where the user obtains information from a range of providers by means of a single search inquiry, that was the original aim. And the idea was to use the Gazetteer to join it all up, and that was before the Gazetteer, that was in 2000. And different suppliers were integrated in the course of the Scotless pilot and the ongoing development. And the pilot crashed in 2001 and never went any further. So, what we were looking at replacing it with in terms of the SDI, protecting folks in land and property, you've got a number of organisations who provide data, land and property data. You've got Registers of Scotland, local authorities, the Assessors Association, the Ordnance Survey, and the utilities. And the idea is really using primarily web service technology to put these data sets into the cloud, build APIs, and allow people to access them. But in order to make that work, you have to have a menu so that people know what's there, and that's the metadata catalogue. So once you know what data's there, you can access it through the layers you want through that, and build portals like Scotless, like SEWeb, or Community Council can build their own portals locally if they've got the skills, or we've built a national Community Council portal on behalf of the Community Councils, and you end up with lots of deliriously happy people to see. So, one of my colleagues put the slide together for a presentation he was doing this week, actually, and I think he did it to inflame the Ordnance Survey as much as anything. But if you think about mapping, government mapping is Ordnance Survey I think is commercial as well. Many commercial organisations use Google, and communities tend to move towards OpenStreetMaps. There's these different sources of base mapping and all of their pluses and minuses. And then there's all the data for our land information service, Spatial Hub. We also do Tell Me Scotland, which is planning notices and other public notices. BGS, Scottish Water, SEWeb, which is SEPA, Scottish National Heritage, Scottish Gas Networks, we were talking to them, but it should really be utilities, PassMap, and Registers of Scotland. There's a lot of people with an awful lot of data, which is of great interest to people in terms of land and property. It allows them to identify opportunities from land, but also constraints of development. The problem is, that was drawing up, I think he said he fitted the circles to the size of the text in them, determined the size of them. But if you give that to somebody else, like for example, SNH or SEPA, their circle would be that size. If you give it to Registers, it would be that size. And to be quite honest, if you give it to us, we'd probably say our circle is that size. Everyone's got their own idea of who's got the most important data. And they're all competing, all doing their own things. And there's a lot of good data, there's a lot of good stuff there, but it's not getting pulled together. So, yeah. Let's come up with some ideas. Why can't we get all these organisations to work together? I say that they're self-obsessed. They have to be, because budgets are getting cut. Everyone's trying for their own survival. So you have to be inward-looking, or you tend to be inward-looking, but you don't have to be. If survival's the main thing you're looking for, and we'll also there's less money about to do things. We need to do things, well, if not for nothing, for as little as we possibly can. So the answer must be, surely, effective governance. So I found this a couple of days ago. This is the governance structure around about the spatial information within the public sector of Scotland. I'm sure that's going to sort something, but it's actually, I showed that slide to someone, a commercial lawyer, who said that that's beautifully done, and it looks as though it's been designed to prevent anything happening, rather than to enable it. There's all these boards and things like that, but we don't have budgets or anything. It's just goodwill or trying to share information, and it's basically, well, in my opinion anyway, it's not really worked. So what we've done with ourselves, there's seven of us in the Spatial Information Service, grown from 1 to 7. We'll explain how we managed to achieve that as well. And we've got a blend of people that come from planning backgrounds, surveying property backgrounds, and technical backgrounds as well. So we've got a good mix of people in the team. We've taken on board the custodianship of the One Scotland Gazetteer. We used to outsource that. We've taken that in-house, and we've got the expertise to do that. We've got a formal partnership with Ordnance Survey to realise some of the IP and local government data around addressing. We've been working with the Ordnance Survey and others to help build an emergency services gazetteer for Scotland. Everything we do, we host in the cloud, and we use open source software for everything except for FME, because the open source version, I think it was GeoKettle we looked at, just didn't work as well. We've got very good communication links with the councils, but the GI community is quite small, and within the local government there's probably 150, 200 people, so everybody more or less knows everybody else, and that works quite well. We've got a portal there that's now available for uploading data and for publishing data, and we've also developed a community council portal to support the Community Empowerment Bill. We've also, which I didn't put on the slide, and this is one of the most important things which we've got as it happened, we're in the process of agreeing a memorandum of understanding with all 32 councils. The Improvement Service is a limited company owned by 32 councils, each having a pound share in it. So the Information Commissioner, when I went to see her about what we're doing for Inspire for local government, suggested that we got a formal agreement in place that actually she was comfortable with, that we could actually act for on behalf of councils and Inspire and do other things. We've operated the Gazetteer without doing it, but our board decided it was time to formalise that, and that is agreed with solace, so it's a question of how it's been signed. So, some of the challenges we face. That's the land area in one council. These are title parcel packets, all the title information lying in boxes on the floor, all carefully referenced.
Who's planning documents?
Titles, legal titles, ownership. These are more like the planning things in map chests. These still exist places, and got a lot of data on them, and no one's at the time nor the resource to digitise. I love the kettles that are the teapots sitting on there. Well, and there are some other big challenges. The engagement is a constant gripe that nobody would listen to the idea of this. No one that controls budgets is that interested. So how do you actually get it through? And we've been extremely lucky because our chief executive has taken the view that we're in danger of inadvertently designing a public sector that's basically ignorant. It just doesn't have the information it needs to build its decisions on, because the information is too hard to find, it's out of date, you can't share it between places, so we need to get better. He's been doing a lot of evangelising on our behalf. The other thing is, now that we've got this data, there's a lot of organisations asking for access to it, not recently. And we're still trying to tidy up bits of licensing and things like that. And we need to build a sustainable funding model for this to keep it going. And we're quite well down that route. There are challenges at an operational level. It's actually finding the person in each local authority who's got the data. There are issues around licensing with Ordnance Survey and others of their IP and the data. There's issues about trying to get the metadata for all these data sets and actually put them into the Scottish metadata catalogue, and the legacy of outdated technology. I'm sure that wasn't that long ago in some councils, still doing that. And also, this one, I think some of you have seen this before, the organisational structure of a council is set up like that, but I think Weber's machine bureaucracy is actually is the model that we've used. And it's basically designed for a good purpose, and it makes it very fair. the rules are put so that you provide a consistent service to the public, and that reduces the risk of favouritism and all sorts of things. It's also, if you notice, it's also the same as a terrorist organisation, structured like that. And the thing about that, why terrorist organisations set themselves up like that, is to stop information travelling up and down the way and across, sharing information. So councils have got this thing where it's very difficult for them to share information between services and all sorts of things. And it means it's difficult to trace the data owners, even with the best will in the world. Even if you go to the GIS manager, or whoever appears to be the GIS manager in a council, they often don't know who's got the data. So if you're wanting tree preservation order data, who do you go to, or cycle paths? It's very, very difficult to find the owner of the data. And again, one of the what we are offering, and in terms of more a commercial offering, is we go through this pain to get this done, and we can contact people in the authorities to save other people going to do the same thing. And breaking down the silos. That was just Googling for a picture of breaking down silos and images. Found that and I could help use it. Would you not move the car ferry first? I do notice this is in France, but apart from that. So, I won't try showing the spatial hub live. It is there. Maybe I can show it later. Maybe I was going to struggle with the browser there. But that's just a general view of where we were a few months ago in terms of the data sets. So that's a sort of cumulative total of all the data sets. East Lothian is fairly neutral there. Yeah. Murray are not there. For a very interesting reason, which never occurred to us, that their GIS manager was trying to make a point to the council's management team that he's under-resourced. So he said, well, you're not getting any data, and I don't care if our chief executive sees it, but he's still working there for now. Bit of a high-risk strategy, I think. But generally, things have moved forward. Showing a similar thing, this is more up-to-date. What we have in that slide that was really quite interesting is these are the main data sets that we hold down inside there. You probably don't need to read them all, but it gives an idea of the range of data sets we have and the levels of completeness for each of these. Green means we've got the council provided the data, red means they haven't. I thought it was quite interesting looking at it that North Ayrshire contributed virtually all the data sets that were asked for. It just so happens that our chief execs on our board, and it's quite taken by this, so obviously that's worked. And you'll also notice that Glasgow have been less than cooperative, which is quite interesting. It's quite concerning as well, because if you're building a national data set that's got a hole in the middle of it, and that hole happens to be Glasgow, it certainly diminishes the usefulness of it. But in front of an investigation, there's a turf war going on in Glasgow between two departments, the one who does GIS and the planners. The planners in Glasgow are not allowed to use GIS. So if they want plans, they have to go to the GIS team who produce them. So in response, when the GIS team asked if they could put the data out, the planners declined. So we're sorting that out, and I'll explain how later on. More serious. So, just on the hub itself for the data download, that's community council boundaries. There's a WMS, WFS, just redacted. It's got the code. I'm just going to the train. It's got the code for getting into the thing. So sorry about that. So that's what it looks like, and then you've got instructions how to use the data and how to download it. And that data set, Community Council Boundaries, is in this Community Council's web portal within the improvement service. Our technical people and the people have got together and built it. And it provides information about public information notices and community areas. We're also developing that now to show community assets, because as of Wednesday, communities can apply to take over the running of any public sector asset if they feel we can do it better and put up a business case to do it. the Scottish Government, the presumption is that they will be given that opportunity, that councils and others will not withhold the information, will not transfer the asset to the community group, which is quite, it's an interesting idea. Whether it works or not remains to be seen. Well, one of my colleagues was telling me, this is another unbelievable thing, that in his area, the local swimming pool was transferred to a community group and it burned down. I couldn't imagine why a swimming pool burned down, but it did. But what they discovered is the community group had taken it on and hadn't insured it. It hadn't occurred to them that it was their building, they had to insure it. So the council had to bail them out and pay for the replacement. So I don't know. I think it's a great idea in principle. How it works in practice, I don't know. So there's a couple of data sets. Planning applications in red hatches and vacant derelict land. And once you start looking at some of the correlation between these data sets, the housing land supply, things like that, there's a lot of decision making on where to put the best places for developments and things like that. And some of the data sets that we've got, the house builders, planning consultants have shown considerable interest in getting access to the data. And we just zoomed in further to an odd bit. So the benefits and drivers. On behalf of councils, we meet their inspire. If they pass us the data, we will meet their inspire obligations without them having to find the resources to do so. We ask for the data, however, council can provide it. We don't interfere with their business processes at all if we can help it. Lots of people go to lots of councils asking for data. If there's one place where you go and you can download the data, it takes that pressure off councils. Anyone who's ever dealt with the Ordnance Survey and their licensing would be much relieved if somebody else bothered with that and you could just forget about it or provide advice with it, so we do that. And we thought originally, kind of when we came up with this idea, to be honest, the last people we probably told it of what we were doing was the GIS managers and other people in councils, because we thought that they would see this as a threat. But it's actually the opposite effect, because it takes away a lot of the drudgery that they have to do of uploading data and writing ridiculous requests for stuff. It takes that away, so they've got more time to do other things. And we have managed to identify a market to actually make a financial return, not to make profit, but to pay for the cost of what we're doing. If we're out with the local authority community, there's better information over there, which should help you build better services. This availability of national layers of consistent current data are great. I mean, it's a fantastic opportunity for people to get access to data. And it provides opportunities to benefit from open data. It actually helps us if councils release their individual data sets as open data. It actually makes the licensing of what we do an awful lot simpler. However, open data. This is the view on one side of the divide. The open data will lead to business opportunities. You'll have data out there as a thing that businesses can use. You'll develop SMEs, and we can support CivTech and other organisations to try and see what we can do with that. That's the idea anyway. These businesses and employees will pay taxes, in theory, and the country will reap great benefits from it. That is the case for open data, or it's the gist of the case for it. However, it's never been actually proven how much, in terms of business opportunities and revenues, been generated from the data that people made open at the moment. DEFRA's made a shed load of data available free of charge and open. Land Registry have put out a lot of data free of charge. The Environment Agency put out an awful lot of their data free of charge and then discovered they'd a £6 million hole in their budget that didn't get bailed out, so they had to reduce their staff. And if you work out how many people are employed, £6 million is quite a lot. The trouble from a Scottish perspective, but not putting any political spin on it, the money and tax money goes into the UK economy. The UK government argues with the Scottish government how much Scotland gets. The Scottish government then argues with local government how much local government gets, how much NHS gets, how much the police, fire and other people get. And then the local government money goes into COSLA, and the councils fight about who gets what. And then it goes down to council level, and each department squabbles back into the tree, the pyramid, of how much they're getting, because they're more important than the people next door, bearing in mind that social services and education are ring-fenced. So the money's less and less. So the money is not going to the people who keep the data up to date. And there was an announcement made on Wednesday this week in Denmark that they've provided an open address register. And that has been very much touted by ODI. What didn't come out in the releases about it was that the Danish government actually funds local authorities to do this work, to provide an open address data set. So it's not done as this open data tends to be done here, where you're put under pressure to make it available and help meet the cost of doing so. And the trouble is, because the people are not there to maintain the data, it's harder to get staff and keep staff in these jobs. The data quality is going to suffer, and that's going to mean you're going to make worse decisions. So what we've tried to do is, we've got a product where this is a specific example, but it's certainly woke our board up. There's about a dozen or so of the data sets we have form the basis of a property inquiry certificate. If you buy a property or sell a property, or if you buy a property, the solicitor will ask for a property inquiry certificate. It costs about £100. There's 150,000 of them in Scotland annually. That means there's a market for that information. It's worth about £15 million. Back 10, 15, 20 years ago, local authorities provided an awful lot of these searches and made revenue from them. However, the private sector have got into that business now, and they can do it far more efficiently than the councils can themselves, because the data is in such a mess in councils. So that has just disappeared. There's £500,000 returned into local government from that. So someone somewhere is making about £14 million, and local governments in Stuk. So, and we've got to get the data from Inspire. So we started talking to the people, the private searchers, saying, look, we've got this information, it's clean, it's nationally available, and it comes as an API you can plug into your back office. Would you be interested in licensing it? And everybody has said yes. It's no surprise, it saves them money. So if we can recover our running costs back through that mechanism, I think what we're doing is we're actually trying to redress the balance. We're making the private companies more efficient, the commercial company more efficient, so it increases their profit and meets the open data thing, but it also protects the people's jobs who manage the data. And we have been given a task to try and basically generate about £1.5 to £2 million within 5 years from the data sales, which is tough, but it certainly seems to be doable. We're already producing some income, you know, but I have to go back to our board in 2022 and explain why we didn't generate as much as we thought. They thought we were being a bit coy and we could probably generate more. And again, it's money that has been spent in maintaining this data. It's not to drive a profit. And because of the way in which we're returning to councils, we're trying to pay it back into the One Scotland Mapping Agreement budget, which comes from the department heads who are actually paying for the staff who do the work. So rather than giving money back to councils, say here it is in the budget, in which case it would disappear, we're trying to focus it right back where it's needed. So our success is really, we need to be able to reduce the grant funding, which is large anyway at the moment. We need to get all 32 councils active in the spatial hub within a year. We're a long way down that now anyway. Deliver the local authority data sets, it should be, for the Scotland's launch in 2017, if anyone actually wants to put local authority data in there. We will meet the 2020 Inspire. What Inspire says has to be done in 2020, but we're pretty sure we can do that. and we have a number of partnerships in the making, both with Scottish Government, Ordnance Survey, Registers of Scotland, potentially. There's a few potential partnerships we're looking at. We've been trying to, where possible, use open source software, and one of the things that we do is we share a lot of the stuff we do with the local authorities. Most authorities use proprietary software, there's very few of them use open source, and they spend a small fortune on it. And there's a lot of scare stories out there, but no one can support open source and things like that. There's risks seen. We're trying to share the expertise that people have there, and as I've said, to try funding the 2022 the mapping agreement as well on behalf of local government. So there's probably quite a few things worthy of discussion. Thank you very much. We're here. Questions?
So what about those red tapes then?
Sorry, it's a secret we can't tell you.
I think we have not got a data set of red kite nesting sites. I can say that with absolute authority. And I think it's unlikely we ever would do.
How was that kind of crystallising all the arguments of that kind of one data set?
Well, that was just an argument completely out of the blue. Nobody saw it coming.
Well, can I follow up on that? That is important. You mentioned in, it was round about that point in the talk, and it was a kind of introductory thing, but you didn't follow up later. But you made an observation about misuse of data and people getting access to data and then doing stuff with it that they weren't allowed to or whatever. And I think I would just like to make clear, and you'll probably agree, but I would like to make clear that need not be a reason for us releasing data, because far too often data hoarders have said, oh, you can't have it because you'll use it in the wrong way. And I think the red kites is a very good example that in the biological world, we've been doing this for years, not just tens of years, 50s and hundreds of years, in terms of being able to sanitize the data so it doesn't reveal, special sites and all the rest of it, that we can do this. So,
I completely agree. The example for that was in Australia, where somebody published, I can't remember, it was nesting or something, some data came out, started shooting, and put posting stuff online, got that one, and that was actually what happened.
But
I take your point, that there's a huge fear about putting data that you've got out there, because people won't know what they're doing with it. And I think the pit shaft, Glasgow, I know, don't necessarily make the data set, or Glasgow are huge in open data. There's huge amounts of open data come from Glasgow, but they're very reluctant to put the pit shaft data out where there were coal mines, because they feel that they've got a liability. If they sell a house, they know there's a pit shaft underneath it. Well, it should be the buyer's solicitor finds that out, but if they haven't made that information available. But the thing that the geotechnical people say about that is you've got to understand, if it's through alluvial sediment or something like that, the fact that the pit shaft is within 50 metres could be an issue. If it's through solid rock, you could build right up to the edge of it. So it's about knowing a bit about the data, but it shouldn't be used, I would completely agree, for not making it available. And Inspire doesn't give you the option anyway. If you have that data, you have to release it.
An example that illustrates the madness of the data sharers. I don't quite like to do my school travel space analysis stuff, which is all for English local authorities. But so I need individual pupil data, so with postcodes and stuff. And the English system gives each pupil a unique pupil reference number, which is and it's got some intelligence about concatenation of different numbers, including the local authority code for when you first went into the local authority system. So before you were in the first primary school or whatever, and if you move houses between local authorities, that number still stays with you, so it still follows you through the system. So that me doing spatial analysis of individual pupils, that would be great. I need an individual ID for each of the records anyway. Why not just use that UPRM, which was invented for that sole purpose, for the purpose of sharing between different things and doing analysis and stuff like that. However, I am never given the UPRM because, well, very rarely, sometimes I am, sometimes there's no consistency between local authorities, but the argument against it is because the intent there is within that number, the identifying number, assuming you know the code system, of the individual local authority, then a person who is adopted, me, when doing an exam, might read which people knows their individual UPRM reference number, may look, see the unique reference number, and go, aha! I was born in West Lothian, that's where I come from, and we'll go off. Now the scenario, the kind of Venn diagram of that, you know, number of intersect circles that have to intersect, number of people who are going to be doing that. But yet, that is why I am not given the data set, that number, that data field that was purely expressly designed in order to be sharing data and to follow results, you know, follow individual people through systems and cross reference between systems and stuff like that. And there's no counter argument to that for me, because I'm a contractor, I have to do what the client gives me, whatever. But there's no, like, logically, if that's the argument, there's no, you just really start counter arguing against that.
You're not quite correct. Every pupil in Scotland has got a unique citizen reference number. Everyone at school has got a unique citizen reference number. Many of us in this room have got unique citizen reference numbers through an entitlement card. Many organisations use the UCRN, Afghan National Entitlement Card, but we use it for door entry into the office. Councils use them for flexi time, all sorts of things. So everyone's got a UCRN, and that is a unique, randomly generated 12-digit identifier. Siemens use it for education purposes. The UPRN is similarly a unique number, but each authority is given out lots of them.
Is this a pupil's, not property?
No property. The UCRN is the pupil number. Siemens are the management information people for education in Scotland. And so they all use the UCRN, and the link to the UPRN is only at that point in time when that person lives there. So, but the UPRN is actually open. It was made open last year. However, to say that the UPRN is open rather bemuses me, because it's of very little use unless you can resolve it to an address.
Okay.
other than, here's a UPRN, so great. But the people who have the IP in that data will not release or permit any of the other information behind the UPRN, but you can use the UPRN to link all sorts of data sets together. But what you do as well, you could be working under a contractor agreement and you could use the UPRN, but the source data, you would have to get Siemens to agree to releasing that.
The problem I have is my client is a transport person, sustainable travel, transport planner or whatever. The data I'm analysing is from education. So there's, you know, an internal argument that has to go, that has to be won internally, that they can then supply it's individual pupil data. So that's by its very nature, very, very sensitive. And even internally, not everybody has, they should have access to that, everybody can have access to that. And then there's the argument of supplying it to a third party, even though I've got all the data commissioner registration and all that sort of stuff. So there's an internal argument first that has to be gone through, and it's back to that argument, that comment you made at the very, very start. Nobody cares or what the hell these map guys do, why it's important. I produce, I send them lists of data fields I need and follow-up document of why I need them and specify blah blah blah. And you know, nobody really understands what you're doing and the technical arguments you're making. And either you've got, and, but because we're doing technical stuff, either it works, or either you can do it to the standard of which you, the technical standard of which you need to do it, or you can't. And you can't do it, and you know you can't do it if the data is not, the spec of the data isn't as you need to do it. So it's they don't have the understanding in which to have a discussion about it.
But that's the whole reason why our service is set up. Not for that
data
set, but any data set, if you wanted to go, you go through degrees of that to, within any council. I mean, we're not a council, but most of us have got local authority background and know what it's like working in councils. We know the councils, and we've struggled to get the data. Even with an MOU, we still struggle to get some of the data because people don't understand various things around it. Data Protection Act is a great thing for not releasing data. But it's difficult for us, but that's part of what we're trying to do. And I mean, obviously we know the data you're talking about pretty well, we've discussed it, but that's not one of the data sets we're looking at the moment. But it's the same principle that the people who are looking for these other data sets, there's one place to go and get the data, and we go through the grief.
Yeah.
I think we're saying the same thing.
I think you talk about this governance here. So the cuts here can go down to the address level. So at that level, we know out in the city, for example, it was a track, quite high cost for accessing the product. Do you provide that paper for free to research or teaching?
Becomes a layer your portal has now got layers on it, whatever. The value, as we all say, of geography is the key, is when you want to mash this stuff up to answer questions. So my question, procedure, but I'm always intrigued on parliamentary questions, and I guess this must be the same for every democratically elected chamber down to local council member, members as well. When people ask questions, under freedom of information or whatever, or First Minister's questions or whatever, and they come back with an answer because they have utilised the civil service information resource behind them to answer that question. Lots of these questions, when you hear them, they're all, there's papers here, the spatial analysis that would have to go in to get that sort of question that comes on, the answer is only the member's area, the one the person has asked the question, how many such and such red pipes are there in West Lothian or whatever, and you can think, we've had to query national data set to do that, or if there's not a national data set, how they got it, blah, 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 all these things go around your head. So how does that kind of work? That's kind of like the opposite end of the local government, but the local government aspect, end of operations, you're all kind of the back office stuff. This is very much front office stuff, the political end, and where's the meeting in the middle? In terms of, do folk ask questions that simply can't be answered, and they can't be answered because the data's not there, and if somebody said the data's not there, is there anybody say, why is the data not there? Because democratically, there can be no question that cannot be answered. But how does that all kind of, this is a good from a question or position of ignorance of my part, how does that all get resolved? And presumably, if there's all these cutbacks and that information staff and stuff like that, it's going to become, the situation become worse and worse.
If you think back to the slide with the cloud and the metadata menu and the portals down below, one of them is a community portal. It's not particularly difficult if you've got access, and it will be open for access to some of the data somehow to anyone. You can just take the URL, plug it into QGIS or something like that, and off you go. You can do what you like, analysis with these data sets. Where we're struggling at the moment, and I think we've got it sorted, we're a long way towards it, is to make that available so that people can look at the thing but not exploit it commercially. Which Inspire doesn't mean you have to give away your data, it just means you have to make it available, you can charge for it. And we've been through that with the Information Commissioner, what we do for the Value Act, that's okay. But you would have to. In an ideal world, which we will hopefully get to, I've expressed my doubts, you should be able to go into the SSDI metadata catalogue, see all these data and find out who to get.
My question is more sort of high level of that, not just how our questions answered or whatever, but back to this, the very point of your talk, spatial and national spatial data infrastructure. So there's kind of, which isn't there, isn't there yet or whatever, and we're going to be striving for donkey's years to do it. So there's still room for kind of, vision stuff and asking, well, what do we actually want? What sort of society do we want to be in, blah, blah, blah. And arguably, in the 21st century information age, all these folk can answer from their phone and doing little apps and stuff like that, that you would want a society where the folk that are what are responsible for doing stuff or knowing or overseeing stuff, like elected members or whatever, should be able to get access to answer questions that they would want to ask.
Yeah. The slide with the Scottish Government boards and that probably answers that question. That if we're going to do what we've done within the spatial hub, it's a local authority data set library where we get access to local authority data sets. We've concentrated on getting that data where we can do it. We've done that largely out of frustration of the lack of progress. And
Unfortunately, we've got a board who have actually understood this now. It's taken a wee bit of while with the devils and the, that took a wee bit to get through with the value of this. Now that they've got it and they're doing it through Solace, we've got a phenomenal support within the majority of local government at a very senior level. Memorandum of understanding helps that. But we can't speak for the rest of the public sector in Scotland. There are all sorts of other people who have good data, and there is no one pulling the whole thing together. And I don't know if there ever will be. So what I'm saying is, we have done what we can to sort our part, which is within our gift to do so. But we can't. We can try influencing. And indeed, what's actually happened is there's a number of other Scottish public sector bodies that have come to us and say, can we actually use the spatial hub as well to put our data in there?
Yeah, it's a two-step, you know, as an analyst or whatever who would get landed with having to answer that question. But you know, the first stage one does the data. You break down what the question is in terms of doing an analysis. What analysis is required? What data sets of what? Question one you have is, do the data sets exist? So you have to go out and find. So there has to be a definitive, well, a catalogue of data or a catalogue of catalogues of data. And you want to be pragmatic and make it as simple to not just build but maintain. And because that's, as you said about Glasgow, this is a problem that I'm having with England or whatever, where you've got loads of academy schools, you know, they drop out. But the problem with academy schools is they drop out. They don't buy in the back office services of the local authority as well. Their data goes from school straight up the pipe to the Department for Education. Doesn't go via the local authority unless the local authority sets up a memorandum of understanding and time for everybody to run the academy schools up there. So you can do. So the idea of doing space analysis of pupil travel of an entire local authority becomes a bit slightly more mute when all the secondary schools are academies. And you can say, well, we've got, you know, there's 30,000 kids and we've lost about 10,000 or whatever. So think, oh good, that's two-thirds of actually the 10,000 is all the secondary schools or whatever. And it's that very much the value of the thing is its complete wholeness of whatever geographic level it's supposed to be about, and it's very much diminished if there's anything missing, because that degrades confidence or whatever, and puts the powers. There's no work. No. But it then links up to that. The pragmatic, I've got to answer this particular question that I've got to do this analysis by Friday or whatever my deadline is, and we possibly will. We'll cobble something together because we know there's a data set. I don't think it's there, we've got that, and do the best that we can and do it. But by It's the opportunity that it presents of the fact that, you know, you're trying to get a spatial data infrastructure together. Surely everybody can sort of understand what that is, and then you can point it at the efficiency.
I'll just refer you to the second last slide, which said managing expectations. We've only been doing this for about a year.
But it's not your load to carry, because you're only local.
Yeah.
You're one particular branch. Of public
sector. This sounds like it could run and run.
Well, yeah.
Over one of those beers at that. Perhaps we should. Perhaps it's drinks time. Yes, no, that sounds painfully familiar. I was going to ask actually, do you show the devil's pictures to sort of senior management types in house? Or? I think it's time to say thank you all for coming. I to leave. If anyone knows anyone or wants anyone, put the mailing list, do shout. Thanks for help setting up.
Also, Google Spatial Hub. Spatial Hub.
Do have a look. Good stuff. Pictures. Thank you all. Thanks.